A year ago in January, we were given a lesson in forgiveness by Margot von Sleipman, who spoke about Sabona, a new model of restorative justice. In 1978, Margot's father, Theodore, was murdered during an armed robbery. Some 30 years later, Margot met and established a reconciliation with this man. Out of this came Margot's concept of resilience, reconciliation, and restoration she calls Sabona, a Zulu word meaning, I see you. Now this is an approach that involves the exploration of our shared humanity and our interconnectedness in and through community. I thought of her words and their relevance as I was preparing this service. Now, the major religious traditions all have forgiveness as a vital part of the spiritual path. Last week, Brian Dunn gave us a powerful and personal take on forgiveness. And during his talk, he mentioned the Christian Lord's Prayer, which I expect many of us have embedded in our memories. The prayer calls us to pray for God to forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. For many of us, this prayer will resonate, but how does this call for forgiveness work if we remove God from the equation? Is it still applicable to our lives? We can consider this from both the spiritual and a psychological approach. Psychologists generally define forgiveness as a conscious, deliberate decision to release feelings of resentment or vengeance toward a person or group who has harmed you, regardless of whether they actually deserve your forgiveness. Just as important as defining what forgiveness is, though, is understanding what forgiveness is not. Experts who study or teach forgiveness make clear that when you forgive, you do not gloss over or deny the seriousness of an offense against you. Forgiveness does not mean forgetting, nor does it mean condoning or excusing offenses. Though forgiveness can help repair a damaged relationship, it doesn't obligate you to reconcile with the person who harmed you or release them from legal or other accountability. Instead, forgiveness brings the forgiver peace of mind and frees them from corrosive anger. The Buddha is sometimes quoted as saying, "Holding on to anger is like holding a hot coal in your hand with the intent of throwing it at someone else. You are the one that gets burned." While there is some debate over whether true forgiveness requires positive feelings toward the offender, experts agree that it at least involves letting go of deeply held negative feelings. In that way, it empowers you to recognize the pain you suffered without letting that pain define you, enabling you to heal and move on with your life. Rabbi Harold Kushner shares a story that illustrates this. A woman in my congregation comes to see me. She is a single mother, divorced, working to support herself and three young children. She says to me, "Since my husband walked out on us, every month is a struggle to pay our bills. I have to tell my kids we have no money to go to the movies while he's living with his new wife in another state. How can you tell me to forgive him?" And I answer her, "I'm not asking you to forgive him because what he did was acceptable. It wasn't. It was mean and selfish. I'm asking you to forgive him because he doesn't deserve the power to live in your head and turn you into a bitter, angry woman. I'd like to see him out of your life emotionally as completely as he is physically, but you keep holding on to him. You're not hurting him by holding on to that resentment. You're hurting yourself. To forgive is to grant pardon without harboring resentment. Pardoning without harboring any resentment conveys the sense of giving completely. True forgiveness cannot be forced. It is a process that must unfold authentically. Now, perhaps we resist forgiveness because of what we think it entails. Forgiveness does not mean condoning by failing to see or judge the action as wrong. It is not excusing the action by somehow not holding the person responsible for what they have done. And forgiveness need not result in reconciliation, in which the relationship is restored. And perhaps most importantly, forgiving does not require forgetting. Faith Baldwin writes, "I think one should forgive and remember. If you forgive and forget, in the usual sense, you're just driving what you remember into the subconscious. It stays there and festers. But to look, even regularly, upon what you remember and know you've forgiven is an achievement." And theologian Miroslav Volf writes, "Forgiveness does not come out of a command. I can be commanded to sweep the floor, but I can't really be commanded to forgive. Forgiveness is something that comes from the depths of the soul, or it doesn't come at all." Now, forgiving has a number of connotations, many of which are negative. Giving in, giving up, admitting defeat, turning the other cheek, condoning, or letting someone off the hook. Perhaps these negative connotations emerge from our early experiences with forgiveness. An adult often influences childhood experiences with forgiveness. We tell children, "Say you're sorry." These words, while well-intentioned, seek to impose reconciliation between children from outside the relationship. A child being told to say these words often says them without conviction because they are not sorry. The child receiving the apology knows that it is not sincere and correctly disbelieves it. The true feelings of both children remain hidden in this transaction. If the true feelings had been expressed, the way to forgiveness may have been discovered. No one is well served by a superficial civility that masquerades as forgiveness. And when forgiveness is granted and right relationship restored, a certain freedom emerges individually and mutually. One of the more compelling reasons for forgiving someone is what the forgiveness does for us rather than what it does for the person we are forgiving. The benefit of extending forgiveness is the fact that it frees us from living in the past or from harboring resentment. Now, often our failure to forgive traps us in a prison of the past. The sentence continues until we consider the possibility of forgiveness and extend leniency, at least to ourselves, if not to others. And it doesn't really matter if your forgiveness is accepted or appreciated by the one you forgive. They will hear and do what they can. The important thing is that you will be free. And a failure of forgiveness occurs when we withhold forgiveness of ourself. Reverend Forrest Church wrote, "We are all guilty. Most of the crimes we commit are not horrid, simply human. crimes punishable only by our conscience. Our consciences sometimes fall asleep or are lulled or drugged, and we do bad things we don't notice, at least for the time being. We also manage to blame others for our own actions or rationalize our behavior through some convenient trick of the mind. But more often, we convict ourselves in the tribunal of conscience. Every day we find reasons to judge and then punish ourselves for what we do or fail to do. Now, some of this punishment is justified, much is not. And because of this, self-forgiveness is also essential. On a personal note, the process of writing my own autobiographical memoir dredged up memories and brought a great deal to the surface, some of which I had just buried over the years. I found that through that process, I was able to let go, forgiving others in some cases, and forgiving myself in many others. Now, that material is still present, but it's no longer unresolved or lurking in the recesses of my mind. Of course, forgiveness is a never-ending process. I have to check myself often, asking forgiveness for my mistakes and forgiving others as well. I do find that the more I'm able to practice this, the more loving kindness and compassion come to be present. In a sermon called How Can I Forgive? By Reverend Anthony David Makar, he brings the question of forgiveness into the Unitarian Universalist community. We have got to talk about forgiveness. How can we live without it? How can we bear this life? Certainly, one possibility is to remain stuck in our resentments. It poisons us. We drink the poison, thinking that it will kill the other person or situation, but it only hurts us. We want to be part of the solution, but when we act from a place of resentment and not peace, we just make things worse. Above all, resentment causes us to live the violation over and over again, so that in effect, we lose our creative freedom to act and to be in new ways. No chance for release, but only imprisonment in pain and victimhood, repeating past hurts over and over. Again, last week, Dunn made reference to philosopher Hannah Arendt, and she writes, "Without forgiveness, we are confined to one single deed from which we can never recover. We remain the victims of its consequences forever." If we take the path of resentment, we cannot be free. If we bring our resentment toward religion or religious institutions to this place, and we just indulge them and allow them free rein, then this place will be no home for the human spirit. This place will not free minds and hearts. This place will put people into bondage. People will want bread, and we will give them stones. We must learn how to begin again in love and compassion. So how do we do that? How do we begin again in love? Let's start simply by getting clear about what forgiveness is. Forgiveness is ultimately a matter of reframing one's relationship with the past so that we are no longer trapped by it and living it compulsively over and over again. We open up our life's albums, survey the pictures within it, and rather than emotional reactivity to what happened, there is clarity. Rather than resentful feelings, there are feelings of mercy and compassion for yourself and for others. Now, this means that forgiveness cannot possibly involve forgetting what happened. It can't possibly be about removing the pictures that trigger resentment feelings and tearing them up, throwing them away. Forgiveness is a change of heart without erasing or forgetting any of the facts of the past. Another sidebar, back in the 1980s and 90s, as the AIDS crisis unfolded, I found myself full of anger and resentment at many of the Christian churches for their suggestion that AIDS was God's punishment for homosexuality. It took many years for me to be able to offer forgiveness, all the while never forgetting what had happened. It's a change of heart, and as I say that, I'm mindful of yet another misunderstanding, that the kind of change we're talking about is that of losing our sense of right and wrong. Too many people think that forgiveness is about allowing the person who did something harmful and wrong to get away with it, enabling them not to have to take responsibility for their actions. But if we Unitarian Universalists truly affirm every person's inherent worth and dignity, then we dare not erase the responsibility that people bear for their actions. We may seek to understand empathetically why they did what they did. We may realize with a shock that if we were in their shoes, we might have done something similarly destructive. But if we erase their responsibility for what they did, we erase a key constituent element of their humanity. Affirming a person's inherent worth and dignity requires that we remind them and empower them to own their actions and accept the consequences. And this is a part of what our first principle as Unitarian Universalists mean. And with this, we can expose yet another confusion about forgiveness. The idea that forgiveness commits us to putting ourselves back into harm's way. Someone has abused us and is likely to continue abusing us, and we think that forgiveness is a matter of forgetting that this actually happened, throwing away our sense of right and wrong, and then going back to business as usual, living a wish that everything is going to be better from now on. But you know what? Wishing doesn't make it so. The forgiveness we feel in our heart can't act supernaturally at a distance and change a situation or a person outside ourselves. What I'm saying, in other words, is that we ought not to forgive forgiveness with reconciliation. Forgiveness is something we do to free ourselves. But reconciliation is when all parties in a conflict are willing to sit down at the same table and willing to change. That's what Sabona is about. Of course, we hope that we can have both. But very often, this is not the case. The person that hurt you might not ever want to change or even be capable of change, or they might be out of our lives permanently for one reason or another. So where are we with forgiveness? Forgiveness is about our own spiritual renewal and freedom. It transforms our relationship with what has hurt us without any forgetting, without any decrease of our sense of right and wrong, without any demand that we put ourselves back in harm's way, and without any necessary change in the other person or situation. Our true goal is not so much forgiveness as it is extending compassion. Don't aim directly for forgiveness. Don't try so hard. Decide that there's going to be a point at which you extend compassion towards the other and towards yourself. Breathe compassion into this world in which people can be so cruel in their anger and in their blame, in their self-righteousness and perfectionism and pettiness. And yet underneath it all is a hopelessness. Beneath it all is that sense of devastating worthlessness and shame. Breathe compassion into this. Breathe compassion into this. Realize that they are merely human like us, and we are merely human like them. This is when forgiveness will happen. Unforced, without strain, a gift of faith. This is when. And Reverend Carl Scovell talks about the gift of forgiveness. When we forgive, we don't forget that we were hurt, that we hurt now, and that we may hurt for a long time, perhaps a lifetime. Forgiveness is not denial. It's not being nice. When we forgive, we don't pretend that the offender is not responsible because of his or her childhood or biology. Forgiveness is not excusing. And forgiveness is not forgetting. When we forgive, we do not block the memory, nor do we nourish it. But no, we do not forget. Forgiveness is not something we give or do, but something we receive. It is not an action, it is a gift. It comes when we want it, and not before. When we forgive, we are freed not from the hurt, but from the dominating power of the hurt. We are able to give up our anger. The hurt and wrath no longer direct us. However it happens, we are free. We still suffer the consequences of the offense, but it no longer masters us. Do you see? Forgiveness comes first for our sake, and then for the sake of the offender, if they are penitent. They may not be, they may not know, they may not want to know, but we are free. With this freedom, we can extend loving kindness and compassion to the world. As we consider our relationships and forces at work in the world, forgiveness can be a challenging prospect. However, as with any teaching, we do not need to accept this on faith. We need to test it in practice and consider the results. May it be so, and let us make it so.